to 3, verse 19, Va'ata, and you, ki hisharta rosha, v'lo shav merisha. But if you do warn a wicked man, and despite your warning, he doesn't do tshuva, he doesn't repent of his evil ways, umidaka rosha, from his evil and his evil ways, hu ba'avono yomus, then he will die, va'ata es nafshecho itzalta, but you will have saved your own soul. So there's like two sides to the same coin. If you don't warn him, then you're in trouble like he is. If you do warn him, then you've saved yourself. So again, the Malbim who we quoted last week continues exactly the same drosha that he started last week. And he says as follows, it's very straightforward. He says, Va'ata umnom im his harata v'lo shov, ben rosha akodem, ben rishu akodem, if the evil person, after being warned, refuses to pay any attention, or mi ben midarko rosha lahabo, or he doesn't repent for what he did, and he's got no intention of changing his behavior in the future. Kiyod holech b'derech rosha. He still wants to continue in his evil path. Then says the Malbim, al tachshov shemes al yodcho yan shinas amazed. If the rosha continues to behave like that, don't believe that you have changed him from an unintentional sinner into an intentional one, and you have caused his death. You haven't. Ki hu rosha ba'avona yomus. He's made this free will decision to be the evil man he is. Va'ata ein chochai b'dover. And you're not responsible at all. U'behechech, behefech. On the contrary. Va'ata es nafshcho itzalto. You've saved yourself. Ba'mehish shehis harato. By warning him, you have saved him. The reality is that the sinner is being punished for what he did, and you've saved your own life by having tried to intervene and save his life by warning him of the consequences of his action. So the Zohar here on this pasuk gives a very well-known example of what God's saying here. The Zohar asks the question, this is the Zohar, the first section of the Zohar on Parashas Bereishis, section Samaches, section 68. The Zohar asks the following question: why did God save Noah, who was righteous, among the wicked? Like, what special traits did Noah have? So the Zohar says he was saved so that he could bring further generations into this world. The human race had to survive. That was God's plan. And he was truly righteous, and therefore fit to produce children. Not only that, says the Zohar, but he warned the sinners every day. But they paid no heed to his words, which really goes against things that we've learnt about Noach. But this is the Zohar's opinion. He says the pasuk in Yecheskel, our pasuk in Yecheskel, applied to him. Va'ato ki yisharta rosha v'lo shav merisho. If you warn a rosha about his behavior, the lo shav merisho, he doesn't repent for what he's done. Umidaka rosha, and he intends to carry on doing it. Hu ba'avono yomos, he will die. Va'ato es nafshecho itzalta, but you have saved your life. So the Zohar says this is the reason Noach was saved. Noach was saved because he fulfilled his pasuk. He did his best, or he did something to try and convince his own generation to change their ways. They wouldn't have anything to do with it, so God destroyed them all and preserved him. And the Zohar says, from this we learn that whoever warns the wicked, even if the wicked don't take any notice, that person saves himself, while the wicked are punished according to their sins. How far should he go, says the Zohar, in warning them? So the Zohar says, to the point of hitting them. You're allowed to hit people. You have to give them a smack to wake them up. So these two psukim here, 18 and 19, deal with warning wicked people about their behavior, what they've done in the past that they should do to teshuva, and to warn them about the future. If they continue on this path, they'll face big trouble. And the Ikkar, the foundation of what God is saying here to Yechezkel, if you do warn them, then you're saving yourself. If you don't warn them, you're putting yourself in the same boat with them, which is a lesson to him, because he's been commanded to rebuke the Jewish people, and he hasn't done so. So God's message, obviously, is to everybody, but specifically and personally to Yechezkel for not speaking out when he was told to in Tel Aviv. So now, while God's at it, God deals with the rules for tzaddikim as well. Verse 18 and 19 deal with the rules when you're dealing with a wicked person. Now what about dealing with a tzaddik who changes his lifestyle? We have many examples in history of Talmidei Chachamim who go off the rails. Great people. We know that one of the great Kohen Gadols of the times of the Gemara, Rabbi Elisha, Kohen Gadol, Rabbi Shmuel Kohen Gadol went off the rails in his 80s. And during the times of the Inquisition, there were plenty of Rabbonim, Rishonim, who wrote Sephorim on the Gemara, converts to Christianity. So it's not usual, but it's not unheard of for tzaddikim to change direction as well and become Rishonim. So now God deals with what happens to a tzaddik when he changes direction. So this is verse 20. U'b'shuv tzaddik mitzidko v'osa ova. What about if a righteous man abandons his Jewish religious spiritual way of life, v'osa ova, and he does wrong, does evil. V'notati michshol lefonov, and when I put a stumbling block in front of him, hu yomus, he will die. Ki lo hisharato mechatoso, yomus, v'lo siskareno sitkosov. He will die for his sins, and the righteous deeds he did will not be remembered. V'domo miyodcho avakesh. And if you didn't warn him, I'll also demand an accounting for his blood from you. Which is a very strange posukim. So the simple understanding of this posukim, if you have a tzaddik, and he changes direction in life, and if he throws it all out the window and becomes a agnostic or an atheist or whatever it is, and so he's going to die, and his righteousness won't be remembered. And God says, I'm writing out my book. Not only will he be killed for changing direction and becoming a Rosho, but all the good he did in the first part of his life won't amount to anything. I'll get rid of that as well. And you should have warned him. And if you didn't warn him while he was changing direction, I'll demand it of you as well. So this is a bit of a strange posuk, as we'll see. Because there's a frightening message in these words for all of us trying to do the right thing. That we're really only one action away from disaster. Like the higher you climb the ladder in terms of spirituality, the more responsibility you've got. You can't go down the ladder. You can't say, and this is one of the reasons why in Yom Kippur, Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, you shouldn't take too much on. You shouldn't make too many grandiose New Year's resolutions. It should be very small, gradual steps, slow steps. Because once you go up a step, you can't go back down again, which is the frightening message of this pasuk. We are only one action away from disaster. When Rashi says here, when a tzaddik does evil in secret and outwardly displays himself to be a righteous man, God says, I will place an overt sin before him. That's what this posuk means. So the posuk says, U'b'shuv tzaddik mitzidko. When a righteous person does a U-turn and repents of his good that he did, and he becomes evil, but also ovel, and he does things that are inappropriate, v'nosati mishol lefon of huyamos. I'll put a stumbling block in his way so that he'll die. And Rashi says God will place an overt sin before him, a type of sin that he can't resist. And when he commits the transgression publicly, it will reveal his real nature. And so when God brings evil upon him, when God kills him, or when God brings suffering to him, the populace will not question God, or his motives for punishing him. So that's Rashi's take on this pasuk. But the Ikar of the pasuk is, again, Yechezkel. Yechezkel's got a responsibility. It makes no difference whether it's a Rosha who doesn't repent and he's determined to sin in the future, or it's a tzaddik who has changed direction in life. You've got a responsibility to warn him and give him tochacha, give him hochich tochich samisachah. You've got a responsibility to rebuke him and make sure he doesn't go in that direction. And this is, to me, this is a very, very frightening pasuk, because the reason why everyone here should be concerned about these words is because of the temptation to believe that God is talking here about a hypocrite, someone who pretends to be a tzaddik, who preaches one thing in public, but in reality, in private, does what he wants, like a charlatan. My Rebbe used to describe his people as professional tzaddikim. And this is what the Gemara Numa interprets the first clause in this verse, that we're talking about a hypocrite. But as we'll see, the reality is he's not, God's not talking about a hypocrite. Just listen to the Gemara first, and then we'll take it a bit further. The Gemara Numa on Daf Pei Vav, page 86b, Pei Vav on the base, says as follows: God exposes the hypocrites due to the desecration of God's name, so others will not think they are truly righteous and that their deeds require imitating. As it's stated, this pasuk, B'shuv tzaddik mitzidko v'osa ovel, that when a tzaddik reverts from being a tzaddik to being a rasha, V'nosati mikshol l'fonov, God says, I'll put a stumbling block in front of him. So the Gemara says there, when a righteous man turns from righteousness and commits sin, the idea of the stumbling block, which is this pasuk in Yechezkel, the Gemara says that when people do not know that someone is wicked to the core, and he represents himself, and he pushes himself forward as a tzaddik, God causes him to sin in public, and other people to sin with him, which is a chil Hashem. His choti umachti as a rabbim. Not only does he sin, but he causes other people to sin. And when that sin is done in public and it's revealed, the hypocrite's true nature is revealed, at which point no one is surprised to see God punishing that hypocrite. But setting that Gemara aside for a second, I'm just giving you my opinion here on this pasuk. I think that the temptation to read the words of this pasuk this way, that God is talking about a hypocrite, or Yechezkel is being told about a hypocrite, I think that idea should be ignored. Because a charlatan, he was never a tzaddik in the first place. I mean, the pasuk says, B'shuv tzaddik mitzidka, when a tzaddik reverts from being a tzaddik, and he turns his back on it, and he becomes a rasha. Now, that's not a hypocrite. A hypocrite is someone who presents himself as a tzaddik, but in reality, he's never been a tzaddik. And he's just a professional tzaddik. He's a charlatan. And that's not what this posuk is saying. This posuk is saying, we're not talking about a charlatan here. Because a charlatan is actually a rosha and is never considered to be a tzaddik. And this pasuk is not talking about a rosha doing bad things. It's talking about a tzaddik doing bad things. And therefore, this pasuk, I think, is actually talking about people who are trying to do the right thing, which is why this clause is so frightening. And this verse is talking about regular people like you and me. The problem with most of us is that we don't hold ourselves to the same standard in private as we do in public. And this fact is true about almost everyone. Obviously, I know myself. There's things that you'll do in private that you won't do in public because you don't want to come across as someone that does things that are inappropriate. You'll say things in private. You'll do things in private. There's certain things that a person will do in private that they wouldn't even dare or wouldn't even consider doing in public. And the most obvious example of this is anger, frustration, aggression, temper. Something that we very often display in our own homes, often with our spouses or our family being the victims of that. And it's that type of behavior that we would never display in a public setting. And I think that's what this passage is talking about. So that's one way of looking at this passage. When we're talking about Peshub Tzadik Mitzidka, when a righteous person turns his back on being righteous, but also over and he does something inappropriate, V'nosati Mikshol Lafonov, God says, I'll put a stumbling block in front of him in public. So that if you're the type of person that displays your anger, and you're aggressive, and you're tempestuous, and you show frustration in private, God will put you in a position where you'll do it in public. And people will say, gee whiz, look at so-and-so. We thought he was a mild-mannered reporter for the Daily Planet. It turns out he's an aggressive individual. So that's one problem. Alternatively, some people are very careful about their choice of language in public. Another example. But in private, they display a vocabulary totally inappropriate to that expected of a Torah Jew. And again, I'm including myself in this. Now, when I'm having a conversation, you know, when I'm giving a shiur, so, you know, I'm very careful with my vocabulary. If I'm talking to a friend of mine who, you know, I've known for 40 years on the phone, so I'm less careful about what I say. And I know this is true. I look at myself in the mirror and I know it's true. To a certain extent, we're all the same. So this type of person is not really a hypocrite. Usually the main motivation for this dichotomy in behavior is the eagerness of people to be perceived in public, in the public arena, as reliable, as honest, as homogeneously good. Everyone, to a greater or lesser extent, has this dichotomy or contrast of behavior present, depending whether they're in public or in private. Private can also mean while in the company of a few trusted like-minded close friends. So you display one type of behavior in public when you're with people that you're not particularly close to. And when you're with your close friends, so your behavior is not on the same level. It's these people, us, not the professional tzaddikim or charlatans that God's talking to about here. God's telling Yechezkel this. When a regular man, this is how I think this is my translation as possible. When a regular man who behaves appropriately in public but acts out his weaknesses in private, I, God, have to take action. So what do I do, says God? I place an overt sin before him, a sin that he cannot resist. And when he commits this transgression publicly, it will reveal the nature that they display really only privately. And so that when I, God, bring evil upon him, I punish him, the populace will recognize my motives for punishing him. So just to take my example of anger, frustration, bad temper, and taking it out on your family, your wife and your family. So God will put, if you're very careful not to do that in public, but when you get home, you use choice language to your children, or you use choice language to your wife, or you rude to your wife. So God will put you in a position where you won't be able to resist doing it in public. And then people will see you for what you are. And see that you're a good person, but you're not the all-encompassing tzaddik you purported to be. So that's a dichot. That's the way I read the pasuk. And I don't read it the way the Gemara reads it. Because I think the language of the Pasuk, Ubushub Tzadik Mitidko, that when a Tzadik reverts or diverts his lifestyle from being a Tzadik to being a Rosha, that can't be talking about a hypocrite. Because a hypocrite can never be described as a Tzadik in the first place. A charlatan is a charlatan. So The defining issue, what defines a tzaddik, is God's definition. If God thinks you're a tzaddik, then you're a tzaddik. If a human being thinks you're a tzaddik, so you could be, and you might be, and you might not be. But here God's speaking. He says, "Ubishuv tzaddik mitzidko." When a tzaddik, somebody that I say is a tzaddik, changes direction in life and becomes a rosha, va'asa ovel, and he turns his back on religion, v'nosati mishal lefonov. Then I'll put a stumbling block in front of him to reveal his true nature. So I don't think that's talking about a hypocrite. Obviously, I'm not saying the Gemara is wrong, but my reading of the Pasuk it reads that way. And unfortunately, whether you believe God is talking to Yechezkel about a true hypocrite, as the Gemara in Yuma does, or whether God is talking to Yechezkel about a regular person whose behavior in private doesn't match up to his behavior in public, you're left with a problem. And the problem are these words. The words that God uses here, v'nosati michshol lefonov, that God will put a stumbling block in front of him, that God will make him sin, put him in a situation where he can't resist the aveira. God makes a person sin. So it's very difficult for us to understand that. Why would God do that? Is that what happens here? That God takes away a person's free will and causes him to sin in public via a sin that God knows he can't resist, just to expose the fact that he obviously does aveiras in private, just so people can say, you know, God got it right again. You know, here this guy, we thought he was a tzaddik, turns out he's no good, because God's put him in a situation where he has to display his true colours. And is that the way God works? Is that God's modus operandi? Is it like this? Is this like what God did with Pharaoh, for example? We're coming up to the book of Shemos now. God removed his ability to say no to disobeying God and Moshe. So it's a very difficult philosophical question here. V'nosati michshol lefonov, the idea that God, so to speak, puts a person in a position where he can't fail to sin. Like, why would God do that? The way we understand God is that, he doesn't force you to do anything. As I've mentioned to you on many occasions, the Torah itself is an authority. It's not a power. The Torah's got no power over you. The Torah is an authority. It tells you what to do. The power is all yours. You can choose to listen, and you can choose not to listen. If you choose to listen, there's a reward that goes with it. If you choose not to listen, there's a price to pay. But the choice is yours. So the Torah is just an authority. Not just, but it's an authority. It's a book of rules and regulations, among other things. But the power, whether to incorporate these rules and regulations into your life, are yours. Where do we see that God, so to speak, intervenes in a human being's free will and puts deliberately puts a stumbling block in front of it so that he should be exposed as a sinner? Like, it really is, it's very, very hard to tolerate this type of understanding of the verse. Like, why would God do that? What is it that in the nature of the Bria, in the nature of the creation, as we know, a person should have the ability to choose for himself. And if he hasn't got the ability to choose for himself, then how can he possibly be punished? So I think the answer is that is not what's got, when it says v'nosati michshol lefonov, that God puts a stumbling block in front of a person that he can't resist, that forces him to sin, as the Pasuk says here. The Pasuk says, "Ubishuv tzaddik mitzidko, v'asa ovel v'nosati michshol lefonov hu yomos." I'll put a stumbling block in front of him and he'll die as a result of it. In other words, he won't be able to resist the aveira. So I think the answer to this question, which is really a deep philosophical question, that's not what's going on in this verse. Let's take an example outlined before of a person who displays anger, frustration, aggression, temper in their own homes. And as I said, often the his or her spouse and the family fall victim to this aggression, this frustration, this temper, this anger. It's behavior that they would never display in public, in a public setting, because they're concerned of what people will say about them. People will think, say that this person has got no self-control. This person is a control freak. This person is aggressive. So what they do is they limit their anger and frustration and aggression and temper to the privacy of their own home. What God does under these circumstances is he gives that person a very difficult challenge to control their anger, to control their frustration, to control their aggression, to control their temper in the public arena. When they say, when let's say somebody verbally abuses them or mocks them in front of their friends and family, such that had they worked on themselves in private to overcome this weakness in their personality and actively worked at home not to lose their temper with their spouse or with their children, they would have been able to pass this test with flying colors in public and laugh off the abuse and the mocking and the shame that they were being subjected to. But because they are so quick to fly off the handle privately, it's almost impossible for them to control themselves in an extreme situation in public as well. God doesn't take away anyone's free will. God will just create a circumstance where a person who has not recognized and worked on his own weaknesses that he displays in private. So, you know, he's used to being angry and letting off steam in his own house. And he doesn't recognize that it's a weakness. He doesn't recognize what he's doing is wrong. And he doesn't work on it. So that person will be put in a situation because of the lack of his own lack of recognition of his own weaknesses. And he'll be put in a situation where it will be almost certain in public to display those private weaknesses in a public forum. And this is why I think this part, the first part of this verse, is a very frightening thought for every one of us. That we have, if we have weaknesses that we display only in private, whether it's related to anger and temper, sexual issues, lashon hara, whatever it is, that we got that problem that we is clearly displayed in private, but we never let it get out into the public forum. And we don't try to correct those weaknesses that afflict us in our private domain, then God, so to speak, will ensure that eventually we will have to confront this weakness in public. Like God's saying, if you won't confront your own weaknesses that you got in private and you confront them privately and get rid of them, then I'll put you in a situation where it's almost certain you'll display them in a public forum with the likelihood that you won't pass the test. And our true private nature will be revealed to all and sundry. And when we are punished, we're going to be punished for not having tried to correct our weakness that is present in our private lives. And then no one will be surprised, because you will have exposed your hidden weaknesses that you didn't try to work on in a public arena. And I think that is the way to understand the first part of this verse. And I think it's very powerful. I think it's affects every human being on the planet, Jews, non-Jews alike, because every human being has got, we say when we daven Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, that God knows all the secrets. God knows what's going on, you know, deep down in your heart, deep down in your mind. And we say in our davening that God explores deep inside a person. And it's something that Ben Yoyoda talked about. Baruch Kvod Hashem Mimkomo. He said the Mekomo is inside the human being. It's the place where God and the human being meet, in the intellect and the heart. The only two people that know about what's going on inside of you is God. God knows what's you and God. God knows what's going on in your mind, and God knows what's going on in your heart. And God recognizes that every person's got weaknesses, which they display in private, which they're too ashamed, or they want to be perceived as well as possible in public. But if the point of this, what God is saying here is, if you have weaknesses that you display privately, it's essential that you work on them. And if you don't work on them, so eventually God will put you in a situation where you'll display these weaknesses in public. If you worked on them, so when the situation arises in public, you'll laugh it off because you'll have worked on it and you know how to overcome it. So I think that's the first lesson that comes out of this pasuk, which is a real musa shmooze all of its own, which could be explored even deeper, but we don't have time to explore it deeper. And then the pasuk says, then God says to him, Kilo his haratu b'chatoso yomus, v'lo siskarenu sitkoso, asher also, v'domo miyod chavakesh. Again, God reiterates that if you, we're talking to Yechezkel, but he could be talking to any one of us, someone who knows that this man has weaknesses, you know that he's got weaknesses that he only displays in private, and you did not take the opportunity to rebuke him about it and advise him to work on himself, then as well as him being punished for his transgressions, you know, he'll be brought out into the open, he'll be exposed, he'll be put in a situation where his true colours will be exposed. Not only will he be punished, but you'll be punished too for not rebuking him. So that is, again, that's specifically Yechezkel, right? Because Yechezkel here is a Navi. So Yechezkel's gone to Tel Aviv, and he's sitting there for 7 days not speaking, and he knows what to do. He knows to rebuke, and he's a Navi, and he knows to rebuke as in general, to the general populace, and the likelihood is he knows how to rebuke the individuals for their individual weaknesses. But he keeps quiet. So the Torah, so the God says to him, V'domo miyod chavakesh, even under those circumstances, someone who's a regular good guy, but he's got private weaknesses, and you don't, and you know about them, and you don't try to encourage him to overcome them, then when he is forced to, or not forced, but he's put in a situation where he is exposed in public for having these weaknesses, then God says, I'll punish you as well for not having tried to set him on the right path to work on his own private weaknesses. So, again, damning words to Yechezkel, and also damning words for us as well, because the reality is that when we get together with our friends, even when our friends say something inappropriate or do something inappropriate, we're loath to criticize them. We're loath to point it out to them because they're our friends. And they've been our friends 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, 40 years. And we rationalize it saying, you know, that's just his nature. Or, you know, that's just him. We say that all the time. Oh, you know, so-and-so. Yeah, that's typical so-and-so. But the reality is that typical so-and-so is a cue. It's the cue for you to do something. And it's a frightening thought that, you know, you got a friend and he's got a particular trait that you know is inappropriate. But he does it all the time. He says it all the time. He does it all the time. In private or just with his friends. But he doesn't display it in public. And you don't do anything about it. So when he's exposed in the public arena for having this weakness, you'll be punished as well. And I think that's a very frightening idea that comes out of this pasuk. But even more difficult than that, as a piece of musa to every one of us, that we've got a responsibility to get our friends and family, our closest, nearest and dearest, that we've got a responsibility to point out the weaknesses they have in private, that they don't display in the public, is three other words in this verse, three other words in this sentence that are very, very frightening. And again, God says to Yechezkel, Ki hisharato b'chatoso yomos. Ki lo hisharato b'chatoso yomos. If you got this guy, and you know he's got private weaknesses, and which he doesn't display in public, and then he's forced, I put him in a situation where he's forced to confront them in public, and the likelihood is he won't be able to pass the test. And he's turned away. So he's a guy that's turned away from righteousness. Velos is karenatit kosov. When the tzaddik, the person with the weaknesses, is eventually punished and displayed in public as not the person you thought he was, his righteousness, his good deeds, will not be remembered. Velos is karenatit kosov. His righteousness will not be remembered. What does that mean? So, nothing could be more frightening than that. Like, you spend 40 years doing mitzvahs, and, you know, you got weaknesses, and eventually they're displayed in public, and you're punished for them, and God says, yeah, everyone thought you were a tzaddik. Turns out you're not such a big tzaddik as you thought you were, or as you tried to display in public. You're not such that great big tzaddik that everyone thought you were. And now God says, Velosis Karenasit Kosov. All your mitzvahs that you did beforehand, God says, I'm not going to think about that. I'm not going to remember that. So the simple meaning of these words is that people that witness another person's weaknesses displayed openly in public will quickly forget all the good he did. That's the nature of human beings. You think a person is a big tzaddik, and then he's exposed in public as being not as wonderful as he thought he might have been. And so people will quick. This is the nature of people, right? Everyone quickly forgets all the good he did, and you just remember him for the public sinner he eventually showed himself up to be. That's just human nature. To associate an individual with his public failures while suppressing the memory of any good he did. So that's the kind way of reading these words, velosis karenatit kosov, that it's the nature of the human being that we see this all the time. One second, there's a chat here. So, we are not the being. Can we decide what is wrongdoing? Yes, we can decide what's wrongdoing. If we see a person who's very careful about lashon hara in public, but in private, when he's sitting at the family dinner table, he doesn't stop talking lashon hara. So, you know, that's something, that's a weakness, right? And it's a responsibility of a spouse. And it's even the responsibility of the children, who, if they're adults, to point out to their father or their mother or whoever it is in the family unit, the private unit, that that's inappropriate talk. My wife, for example, when she hears lashon hara at the table, says, can we talk about recipes? Which is code for, listen, I don't like the tone of the language at the table. You know, we shouldn't be talking about this person. We shouldn't be talking about any but people. So there is a response. And she says that to me, you know, all the time. And, of course, in the public arena, I'm a great tzaddik. Everybody knows. Joan Roth, you tell everybody that Harry Amjor is a great tzaddik, right? But the reality is Harry Amjor isn't a great tzaddik. And when he's sitting Shabbos lunch and he's had a few too many inside of him, he's prone to do things and say things that he shouldn't say. At which point his wife said, let's talk about recipes, which is the correct mode of rebuke, right? So, yes, Cherna, we're not Nevi'im, but we do know there are certain overt behavior patterns that people have that they display in private, they don't display in public, that a spouse or somebody else has got a responsibility to put their wife or husband or child or whoever it is in the private arena back on the right path. And if you don't do so eventually they'll be exposed and they don't work on themselves because they've never been rebuked for what they're saying or what they're doing. Eventually they'll be exposed and you'll be punished along with them for not having rebuked them. And that's a frightening idea. And this idea of velosis karenosit kosov, and when a person's exposed and he's not such a big tzaddik as he thought you were, velosis karenosit kosov, that his tzidkus, his the righteous deeds that he did, God said, will not be remembered. So we can alleviate the horror of that statement by saying, well, you know what God means. God doesn't mean that all his righteousness will be forgotten. God won't take into account all the mitzvahs he's done. It just means, you know, people, that's the nature of people. That people, when, you know, with social media, so you can have a guy who's been a public servant all his life And then, you know, one tweet he did or one email he sent is exposed on public, is exposed on social media that was, he says something inappropriate or he forwarded a picture that was inappropriate, whatever it is. So everybody remembers him for that. And everything he'd done in the past that was charitable, that was good, that was righteous and everything. So people don't remember that. The nature of human beings is they only, you know, oh, he's the guy that, you know, he's the guy that that did this, or he's the guy that did that wrong. They don't add up the list of all the good things he did, so people are very easy, very happy to forget the things that he did that were good. They only want to talk about the things he did, you know, the slander and the sleaze, which is the nature of social media. It's all about sleaze. If you got some sleaze to tell about somebody, oh, everybody wants to listen to that. If you want to tell about somebody who did something good, so who's interested in that? So that's one way of reading these words, velosis carena sit coso. That if you want to make yourself feel better, then read that the words of this verse like that. But the reality is you're fooling yourself. Because Chazal say that this it is God that is being referred to in this verse. It's not human beings. Velosis carena sit coso. It is God that will not take into consideration the righteous deeds of this person. And this is a very, very difficult idea to stomach. You know, if you go off the derech, or you're exposed for being somebody that doesn't pay attention to his own weaknesses, eventually you'll be exposed in public, and God will not remember your the good things you did. Now, that's a frightening idea, and it's also problematic in the sense that we know from Chazal, we know from the Gemara, that Ein HaKadosh Baruch Hu mekapeach schar shel kol beria, that God does not withhold reward from any creature, that God, so to speak, whatever mitzvah you do, that's money in the bank. So how can it be that velosis karena sit koso, that if you're exposed as not being the person you purport yourself to be, that God, so to speak, forgets about all the mitzvahs you did? After all, Ein HaKadosh Baruch Hu mekapeach schar kol beria. That's an axiom of Chazal, that God doesn't withhold reward from any creature. And there's a really interesting application of this idea. And the reality is that God doesn't do trade-offs either. Like God, you know, you could say to yourself, you know, well, you know, you come into Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, you know, you say, you know, I've been keeping a score this year, right? I've been keeping a score. So I've done 12,300 mitzvahs. And I've done 4,300 averus. So let's net them off against each other. So you got 12,300 mitzvahs, 4,300 averus. So I'm in credit 8,000. So I've got nothing to worry about. Well, God doesn't work like that. God doesn't work like that. God doesn't do contras. God doesn't do accountancy work that way. Ein HaKadosh Baruch Hu mekapeach schar kol beria. That God doesn't hold reward from any creature. For the 12,300 mitzvahs you did, you'll be rewarded. For the 4,300 averus you did, there'll be a price to pay. There's no contra here. There's no offsetting, as we used to say in accountancy. We don't offset the averus against the mitzvahs. So what does it mean here? What does Pasuk mean? The velosis karena sit koso. That under certain circumstances, God will, so to speak, dismiss the righteousness you've displayed for years, even if it is, you know, only in public. Nevertheless, a righteous deed deserves a reward. How is it possible, velosis karena, that God will forget about it? God won't remember it. God won't take it into account. And again, this idea that God, so to speak, when you do a mitzvah, it's money in the bank, and there's nothing anyone can do to take away that reward. It's already on your ledger and cannot be removed. And this idea of Eina Kodesh Baruch Hu Mekapech Schar She Kol Beria, that God doesn't withhold reward from any creature. We see this, there's a tremendous application of this idea in this week's parasha, funny enough. This week's parasha is Shemos. And in the second chapter of Shemos, I'll finish with this idea and then we'll come back to this pasuk next week because this pasuk is very troubling. In the second chapter of Shemos, which we're going to read on Shabbos, it says in verses 11 and 12, it says, Vayihi bayomim, everyone's aware of this story. Vayihi bayomim ohem, it was during this period. Vayigdal Moshe, Moshe who is now living in the palace of the pharaohs, as the adopted son of the daughter of Pharaoh, Bisya Bas Paro, Batya, the daughter of Pharaoh. Vayetzel ocho vayabasiv losom, he went for a walk. And he saw the troubles that the Jewish people were in of being oppressed. Vayar ish mitzri, and he saw an Egyptian man, Maka ish ivri me'echo, beating up a Jewish man, one of Moshe Rabbeinu's brothers, not literally his brothers, but a fellow Jew. Vayifen cho v'cho, says the pasuk, and he looked forward, he looked in all directions. Vayar ki ein ish, and he saw there was no one watching. Vayaches amitzri, and he saw, and he struck down the Egyptian, he killed him. Vayitmenehu b'chol, and he buried him in the sand. So Rashi says the most amazing thing on this pasuk. It says in the pasuk Vayar ki ein ish, that Moshe saw there was no man around. Now, the literal reading of the pasuk is he checked to see if anybody was watching, and when he saw that no one was witnessing what he was doing, so he killed the Egyptian. So Rashi says a completely different pshat. Rashi says, what did Moshe see? He says he saw there was no man. He saw that there was no man destined to be descended from this Egyptian who could become a convert and a tzaddik. And that's what he looked into. He looked into this Egyptian's future. And based on this chazal that Rashi brings, what was Moshe's motivation here? What's Moshe trying to avoid? You know, the literal reading of the verse is very straightforward. Moshe looked around to see if there's any witnesses, to see who could identify him as killing this Egyptian. Rashi says, no, he looked into his future. Vayar ki ein ish, that he saw there was no man destined to come from this Egyptian who's going to be a tzaddik. So what was Moshe's motivation here? What's Moshe trying to avoid? What would happen if this Egyptian did have in his descendants a big tzaddik? And Moshe didn't look and check out his future bloodline and just killed it. What would happen then? So Rashi doesn't deal with that. But you have to say that Moshe's motivation here is that he's trying to protect the Egyptian. Because if that Egyptian would have had a tzaddik in his future bloodline, then that tzaddik, if born to the Egyptian's descendants, would have been able to benefit his antecedents, like this Egyptian, by his actions, by his Torah, by his good deeds. But if Moshe kills him now, without investigating his future descendants, then the tzaddik that's destined to be born in the future to this to the bloodline of this Egyptian will be born to somebody else's bloodline. The tzaddik won't be affected. The tzaddik will still be born. The only difference would be is the tzaddik will be born into somebody else's bloodline, and this Egyptian won't get the benefit of that. And that was something Moshe wouldn't allow to happen. Because no one has the right to deny somebody else's benefits. And that's what's going on here when we say in Chazal, Ein HaKadosh Baruch Hu Mekapech Schar Kol Beria. God doesn't withhold reward from any creature. So the question here is amplified. The story of Moshe Rabbeinu is a fascinating story here. That's what he was looking for. If he would have seen that this Egyptian had a tzaddik come out of him, He looked into the future. Vayaki Einish. Only then Vayaches Amitzri. He saw that this Egyptian had no one, so to speak, to give him some type of benefit, give him some type of reward that in the future he would have had it. Maybe he would have had a descendant that had learned Shas and made a Siyum in memory of his Goyishki Egyptian great 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 grandfather. So if that would have been the case, Moshe would have had to think again. But Moshe looked and he saw that there was no one. And the reason he did that is because God doesn't withhold reward from any creature. So the question here becomes amplified. When the verse says here that God, you have a tzaddik that turns away from righteousness, that and he becomes a rasha, so to speak. God, so to speak, dismisses all the righteous things that he did in his life. How? Why would God or could God do this? How is it possible that God can do something like this? And Chazal say, this pasuk is talking about God. It's not talking about in the public forum. That in the public forum, people won't remember the good he does. They'll just remember the bad. That it takes as Shlomo Melech says, it takes a lifetime to get a good name and 10 seconds to destroy everything you've built up over a 40-year period. By one action, you know, that's all people will talk about. One bad action that you did. One geneva that you did. One act of impropriety that you performed. So people will remember that. They won't remember all the good you did. But surely God doesn't work like that. So what does it mean? Velosis Karenis et Kosov. How is it that God can make a statement that a righteous person, even though, you know, he's a from man for 50 years. And okay, so he goes off the rails after 50 years. And he becomes a Rosha. Okay, so we know that's happened in Jewish history. We know that's happened. We know that happened during the times of the Crusades. We know that's happened at the time of the Spanish Inquisition. We know that's happened, not regularly, but we know it's happened. And we know it's happened to a Kohen Gadol. But the idea that the 20, 30, 40, 50, 60 years that a person was a tzaddik and he tried to do the right thing. But later in life, you know, he threw it all away. The idea is velotzit karenotzit kosov, that the idea that God will, so to speak, dismiss all the righteous acts that he did, which is what this posuk is saying. Velotzit karenotzit kosov. And this posuk is very clear. This pasuk is ubushuv tzaddik mitzidka, that when a tzaddik regrets what he's done, he repents from being a tzaddik. Va'asa avel, so and he does terrible things. So God says, you know, velosid karenosid kosov. God says, I won't remember. I'll dismiss all the good things that he did. How is that possible? So that is the question that we're going to leave over till next week, because the answer is a Gemara in Kedushin, it's a very complicated answer, but it's a very interesting answer. So that's the question I'm going to leave over. Obviously, I like to leave over a question. So that people come back next week to hear the answer. So the question is really very powerful. How can it be that a person who spends his life or a good part of his life being righteous, doing good things, doing mitzvahs, keeping Shabbos, keeping Yom Tov, buying a lulav and esrog, putting tefillin on every day and building up a whole, you know, nest egg, so to speak, of mitzvahs, how can it be that God says, you know, if he changes direction later in life, Elosis Karenosid Kosov, God says, I won't remember all the mitzvahs that he's done. How can that be? Especially when you consider that God doesn't, that we've got an axiom that when you've done a mitzvah, there's money in the bank. God doesn't withhold reward from any creature, from any mitzvah that you've done. So that's the question that we're going to leave over. So, I'll just leave you to think about that for a bit. We'll deal with this answer next week. And specifically how it relates here to Yechezkel. Because this is a very important issue. It goes to the very heart of the way God operates in this world. because if this verse means literally what it's saying, we're all in trouble, right? We're all in trouble. So we'll have to deal with this question next week. So please God, next week we'll deal with the answer to this question, which is seems very paradoxical. But until then, we'll just have to wait, unless somebody can come up with a good answer. But now's the time for questions. If anybody's got any questions, now's the time. Sure. Absolutely. Absolutely right. And that's what we're going to see next week. This is all a Musa Joshua, but it's not, as I said, it's not just a Musa Joshua to Yechezkel. This is a Musa Joshua to everybody, because everybody, to a greater or lesser extent, is in this situation. Because we all know people that, you know, within our family units or within the our friends or whatever, that have got, not discounting our own selves, that have got weaknesses that need addressing. And if they're not addressed, so they fester and they get worse. And again, this is, I think you're absolutely right in your analysis here, that it can't possibly be that's God's modus operandi. And we'll see next week that what God is talking about here, exactly what these words mean. That God, so to speak, will not remember his righteous deeds. It really doesn't mean exactly that. And we'll see. We'll see what there's a Gemara in Kiddushin on Daf Mem on the base that we'll deal with next week. That will hopefully clear up exactly what this pasuk is talking about. And sure. No, I didn't say that. Sorry, I will do next week. Okay, that's your lot for today. So we're left with a paradox. How does God relate to a person who turns his back on religion, or not even turns his back on religion, but who's spent a lifetime doing good things, and then he turns his back on it, or even to the extent where a person who's got weaknesses that he doesn't work on. And as Joan quite rightly said, God says he's going to, if a person doesn't work on his weaknesses, God will expose them in public, which seems, again, unthinkable. And not only that, but a person that turns his back on religion after a lifetime of being from, or even 20 years, or 10 years, or 15 years, or 30 years, or whatever it is, God's not going to remember all the mitzvahs he did. That's just ridiculous. We couldn't live that way. That's midas hadin. So exactly what this pasuk means, we will discover in Mitzvah Hashem next week. Kol tov to everybody. Thank you for paying attention. Thank you for being here. And please, God will answer the question, this very important question, next week. Okay. Kol tov to everybody. Kol tov. Hold up.